Hey everybody, just wanted to give a quick message here before this episode starts. We recorded this back in about July. I saved it because I thought this was probably the time to air it when people were starting to watch the bowl season and really kind of getting ready for rookie drafts, stuff like that, getting ready to possibly start a new league and thinking maybe a Devy League is what I want to start. So as you watch college football, you know, think about this Devy concept. You know, if there's any player takes in here, obviously things might have changed in the last 5 months or so. So don't hold that against Katie. She's great. If you need help, reach out to her. She came on just to help me kind of understand the Devy League in general. So that's what this episode is. Hope everybody enjoys it. Thanks a lot.
Welcome back to Fantasy Insanity. I'm your host, John Bosch. Tonight, I am joined by the queen of Devy, which is exactly what she's here to talk about tonight. So, Katie Flower of UTH, I'm sure everybody knows her by now. Thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, John? Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
I'm doing all right. I'm looking forward to learning some detailed information about a Devy League. I've never played in one, obviously. This is my first time jumping in the Dynasty this year. So, I do want to learn about, you know, what a Devy League is because it is different. But before we get into that, you know, when did you start playing fantasy football?
I started playing fantasy football, I think it was about 6 years ago. It was redraft, and I got into it from a friend of mine. He gave me 3 days' notice before the draft. I had to cram. My season stunk. I had Jamal Charles, and he got hurt. He was my best player, and then he got hurt, and Steven Jackson just stunk it up, and my wide receivers were crap. And so I learned a lot on the fly, and then I didn't get disappointed, came back the next year, joined several redraft leagues, and just really immersed myself in learning the strategies. I'm a very strategic person. I don't like to get beat. I'm very competitive, and so I don't mind putting in the time to study. It's so much fun. It definitely makes the games so much more fun to watch, and I love college football as well as NFL football. So a couple of years ago in the 2014 season, I got my first foray into Dynasty, and absolutely love Dynasty because in redraft there isn't very much trading. And there's only the one draft at the beginning of the year. With Dynasty, there's a lot more trading, and there's always going to be a rookie free agent draft.
Okay, so then once you jumped into the Dynasty, and you know you're watching players that you're keeping for more than just that year, you caught that bug rather quickly going from redraft to Dynasty. Do you still play any redraft? Have you gone back to that at all?
I do. I have, since that first year of finishing very poorly, I've done quite well, and I play in my local leagues as well as some online with strangers, but the one Survivor League with all the people that were on Survivor and Amazing Race, it was kind of reality TV based. I still compete against them every year as well in redraft. So I probably have about four or five redraft leagues, and then I am in 40 dynasty leagues.
Okay, wait a second. Now I don't know this story.
Oh, okay.
How are you in a league with people from Survivor and Amazing Race?
For the last 10 years, I've been going to either Cocoa Beach, Florida, or Orlando for a charity event. And you get to meet and hang out with for 4 days the people that were on the television show Survivor, which is one of my favorite television shows. I even applied a couple of times and ate a spider on my interview and everything and still didn't get a call back. Amazing Race and other reality shows also have people there. And so you hang out with them. I was volunteering to help giving them rides back and forth from the airport into the different events and helping raise money for the charity, Give the Kids the World. And it's down in Orlando, very good charity, a lot of fun event. We have a golf tournament and just usually raise all year. And so once I get to meet and play with these guys and gals that have been on the show, we become friends on Facebook and I hang out and talk to them and one of the guys that runs the charity asked me if I wanted to play in the football, fantasy football, and I said sure, and I've been in that redraft league ever since.
Okay, now I'm a huge Survivor and Amazing Race fan.
There you
literally
go.
Like, if you ask me what two shows would you want to continue to watch if there were only two shows and they're not sports, it would probably be those two, because they change every year and they're always a little bit different, and I love the strategy and the social element that takes place in those games.
Me too.
All right, so I gotta ask, are you dominating in that league, or is there anybody that we're going to know that's a pretty good fantasy football player?
I won it last year. The first year that I played, Danny Boatwright, who won Survivor, I think it was Guatemala. Pretty sure it was Guatemala. She won the whole season, and she's played on and off. One of the guys, Ed Snyder from Naked and Afraid, was in it last year. He's not that good at fantasy football. And the twins from Amazing Race, I can't remember, the Jordan, they're from New York. He's often playing, and it varies. You know, each year it changes up. And then there's some bands that are involved in the league as well. There's 12 teams, so I've got my spot. I won it all last year, and in fact, I was in four redraft leagues, and I won every single one of them.
Nice. That is a good season. I look forward to
exactly.
having a season like that someday. Someday. Instead of spending time making leagues, I want to spend time winning leagues. That'll be way more fun, I think. Well, probably not for me, but okay. So then you've played the redraft. You obviously quickly moved on to the dynasty. At what point did you realize, you know what, I kind of want to play in something even a little bit deeper than just this?
Well, right from the beginning. Again, I like strategy a lot, and that's the draw. And at the end of the 2014 season, I was starting to look around at some startups. I didn't have a lot of startups in 2014. I had a couple of orphans that I took over and tried to build on, and a couple startups. But at the end of the season, one of the people advertised that they had a Devy League, and Devy is short for developmental player. And it was one pick per person, and it was a startup draft, and you could trade your pick or you can take it anywhere you want in the draft. There were rookies and veterans and everybody in the actually there was just veterans and Devy players. The rookies weren't going to be drafted until the next spring after the NFL draft. So my very first round of startup, which everybody thought I was crazy, but I took Todd Gurley, and the rest is history. That league, I'm doing very well, and I was in the championship. No, that one I was in the semifinals, and I lost. I won the season as the champion, but I ended up losing in the semifinals in that one. But I've got a great young team, and you get one college player every season. It's usually right around the time of the Super Bowl to try to keep the league invested and wanting to do some off-season activities. And then we have our regular rookie draft right after the NFL draft. So started off with just the one developmental player, and they go right on your active roster. So that's a strategy in and of itself. You have a 28-man roster in that particular league, and whoever you carry, you could pick somebody that's a freshman in college and have to carry them for three seasons on your active roster, taking up, you know, a potential backup spot. And that's one of the things with Devy leagues. You have to look at what your starting requirements are, what your active roster, the quantity and how deep it is. After that, I got into some where you could pick two Devy players, and it's a lot more fun the more players that you can get. But developmental players, Devy players, are very risky. Even the guys that you think are really good, if they're a year or two out, it's hard to tell. The more information that you know about them, the better it is to be able to tell. But even with rookies, we don't succeed and hit on every single one of them. So just imagine having less information about a college player. You watch their film, and there's not as much out there on them. you like them, their size, their physical attributes, the way they can catch the ball, and they're dominating at the college level, but projecting that to the NFL and will they be a fantasy football success for you is really tough.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a pretty high bust rate, but you're hopefully not putting too much capital into them. But I am curious about the keeping it on the active roster. Is that standard? I would automatically think they would be on, like, you know, some sort of a taxi squad or even like a Devy squad or, you know, some sort of secondary squad.
It varies from league to league. I'm in two where they go directly onto the active roster. I've got probably half a dozen Devy leagues that I'm in now out of the 40 total dynasty that I'm in. And you keep the college players the entire time. If they make it to the NFL, they become part of your active roster. I do have some that are much deeper where you can have up to 30 college players on your team and they do go on a taxi squad. So you can each year they graduate and move up onto your active roster. You have to drop the number of players to make room for them. And they just stay on your taxi squad until they become either a bust or make it to the NFL. And you can trade them. You can trade them as they're still in college as assets. It's hard to gauge the value, though. That's part of the tricky strategy of it. If you have a guy like Nick Chubb that you project as a high rookie pick, he, you would think, is going to be worth what you would ask for the 101 or more, and yet he's somebody that may not even make it to the NFL. You don't know that he will. You look at guys like Duke Williams and Darunya Wilson were top Devy prospects just last year, and nobody wants them even in a six-round rookie draft now. And it's because at the combine, they didn't do that well. They weren't as fast as they look in college. They were productive in college. They were big size-wise, but that's what I'm talking about. They may look like safe players to take, and everybody's Googling over them and oohing and aahing, but the NFL combine and then where they get drafted, if they get drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL, there's a fairly good chance. But even that, as you know, rookie bust rate in the first round, 50-60%. So
with that many players, you know, if you've got 30 Devy spots, what does a rookie draft even look like in that league then?
Very depleted. And that's where And part of the strategy comes into play. If you have a very early pick, there are guys that slip through the cracks. Like Devon Parker and Kevin White weren't on anybody's radar in Devy, and then they were early rookie picks, regardless of the fact that they didn't have as much early breakout or college production until later on. And there's guys like that every year. Quarterbacks like Carson Wentz and Paxton Lynch weren't on anybody's Devy radar. And if you're playing in a super flex Devy league and you have an early first, that's gold. You strike gold. But the later firsts are more like a third round pick. It's very hard to round a Devy depleted rookie first. So that's part of the risk involved as well, trading and trying to assess the values.
How many rounds do you guys typically do in a rookie draft then in the Devy league that's that deep?
Usually it's a 20-round startup Devy draft, and then it's 6 rounds every year after that in the ones that are that deep. In the ones where I've got two or three Devy players or two or three taxi squad, you may have a 1 or 2 round Devy draft each year, and it's usually kept separate from the rookie draft. There are some where they mix the Devys in with the rookie draft, and you can pick either a top Devy or a top rookie. That makes it even more strategy. Would you take a guy like Will Fuller, or do you want to take a guy like 2018 running back Saquon Barkley from Penn State, who looks to be a beast? And again, it's a roll of the dice. You don't know for sure 100% that what he's going to be like. Les Diestrunk was a high Devy pick, and he ended up not even making a blip on a fantasy radar when he made it to the NFL. So 35% is about the hit rate on running backs, and about 23% is the hit rate on wide receivers. Quarterbacks is only about 6%. It's so tough because only about two quarterbacks on average make it as an NFL starter in the last 15 years. Two per year on average. And there's 128 Division I college quarterbacks out there. Even try to pick like Cardale Jones. Was a top prospect just a season ago. And Christian Hackenberg, his freshman year was a hot Debbie commodity, but ended up, he may not even be a starter for the Jets ever. So, and tight ends are just as bad as quarterbacks trying to predict them. The one thing I've found in the pattern for tight ends is if they're a five-star prospect, they have 100% hit rate of being a starter in the NFL. But that's the only position where there's been any kind of correlation to their five-star ranking.
That's interesting. The Debbie aspect does, it definitely piques my interest. I love football. I watch a little bit of college football on Saturday. I'll watch whatever the primetime game is. If I don't have anything else going on, I'll watch the Buckeyes. But other than that, like I watch the Bearcats if they're on. But other than that, I don't really watch, I don't like sit down on Saturday to watch football the way I do on a Sunday. I'm assuming that if you're in a Debbie league, does that make Saturday almost feel like a Sunday to you then?
Absolutely, because it's for the same reason. So you've got three or four college players that are on your roster or your taxi squad, and you're watching to see, are they going out and get busted this weekend for doing something stupid, or are they going to break their leg or get a setback, or is some freshman going to take their job because they're better than them, or or are they going to shine and do like what you expect? And it's fun cheering for them, but it's also just as frustrating. Like, I don't know how many times I've taken a Debbie player and then the very next week they get injured, but it's a season ending injury, but it's not necessarily a career ending injury. But a guy like Marcus Lattimore that had two major injuries, he was drafted very, very young as a Debbie prospect. And he ended up unfortunately not really being able to do anything.
Yeah, he's one that kind of brings me to my next question. With having a Debbie player, how quick are you to turn a Debbie player if you can just get any profit? You take him whatever round you would take him in, and somebody offers you a pick just, one or two rounds higher. Are you jumping at that just because you've already profited off of a very high-risk investment, essentially?
It really depends on the settings of the league and how I feel my roster is. But I tend to draft a younger roster in the startup to begin with. That way they can kind of grow together, and I don't necessarily have to sell my Debbie players. I can let them develop and then hit and make an even better profit. So if there is a guy that's a rookie and I have a lot of faith in him and I've got a real hot named Debbie prospect, I might turn that Debbie player into a guy that's already in the NFL and I know where he was drafted and I want him on my team right now and producing right now. More often than not, though, I like the scouting of the Debbie. I like watching college football. I like kind of predict and pick who's going to be the next star, whether it's a superstar, elite type guy, or just somebody that isn't on very many people's radar, but I like them on tape and I have a lot of faith in them. I want to see them develop. That's why I like the really deep leagues, because you can take a chance on a guy like James Washington out of Oklahoma State. Great young wide receiver, good hands, but he's not a top 20 Debbie pick generally. He's beyond that, and he may end up sneaking up on people when he finally makes it to the NFL. Those are the is watching them develop, and are they better when they hit the NFL than most need to begin with?
So then, throughout the week, do you pretty much just watch football every night. I mean, college is now on essentially every night that there's not the NFL. And even on Thursday nights, they overlap. I mean, once football season starts, are you football 24/7 pretty much, or do you not even try to watch all the
No,
games?
you can't. I don't know too many people that can watch all the games. I do record a lot, and I've got, like, for NFL, I've got the Sunday ticket, and I know there's some packages. I haven't gotten them. This is my first full season where I will have had those two really deep leagues. So I will want to watch more college games than ever before. I'm a SC gal. I love the Arkansas Razorbacks game religiously, whether it's live or recorded. And because I watch the SEC, I see teams like LSU and Alabama and Georgia and all, you know, Ole Miss and Mississippi State and all those guys, good rivalries in Auburn. They've got some really good talent coming up. So that's one of the nice things about being a Razorback fan is I do get to see the SEC has put more NFL first round picks in than anybody else when it comes to the skill position. So just watching SEC network alone, I've got a pretty good jump on the scouting. And then you know, watching ESPN and at least watching highlights of the other games. And YouTube is good. I try to just where I can't watch them live, go find something on the internet too.
Okay, so you said YouTube. Are there any other resources then that you use?
NFL Draft Breakdown has a lot of college players, and that's a good way to scout them as well.
Okay,
Matt
he's.
Waldman has a lot of analysis watching film, and he's got a lot of the players. He doesn't start with this next year until probably mid-season, mid college football season. Things start trickling more and more.
So say you're a commissioner of a dynasty league, and you're wanting to test the waters of transitioning to a Devy league. One, how do you recommend doing that? And then two, how do you get your other owners on board and interested? How do you sell it to them if there's some resistance?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily, if there's resistance, you want to have at least the majority on board and wanting to do it and excited about it because it is exciting and it is a lot of fun. And you'll find that there are some people just trade their picks and just keep their veterans and rookie players. And there are others that will trade for extra Devy picks because that's what they want, even if it means they have to, even if they've got two taxi squad spots and then they burn two regular spots just to have the extra Devy players, they'll do it because to them it's worth the shot. If you've got four players and one of them hits and it would have been in the 101 to 103 rookie range, that's pretty big for your dynasty team. That really helps pump it, you know, with the adrenaline when they become somebody in the NFL. And even guys that aren't first round rookie picks can still contribute. It's a matter of patience, though. What type of owner are you? So if you're a commissioner of a league and you're trying to get into it, I would say just add one Devy position, keep it separate from the rookie draft. Have a taxi squad, maybe of three players deep, so that if people trade, they don't have to necessarily put the Devy players on their active roster, and just start there, and then see how it goes. And maybe the next year, add one additional Devy pick and make it two. Transition slowly because that'll get people used to the depreciation of the rookie picks. It'll give them an understanding of the values and how to trade and how to rate them a little bit, that kind of stuff.
So you guys don't have a Devy trade calculator yet?
Not yet. Working on it.
You
I
really?
know. Yeah, I know that Chad's been working on values more in the Devy rankings and projection model and things like that. I've written several articles on the kinds of attributes that I'm looking for. I've been studying a lot on hit rates. I don't have, because it takes so many years for these players to NFL and then figure out where they were drafted in Devy, it takes a long time to research before you even come close to the hit rate. But I do know from some of my research that it doesn't matter where you pick a Devy player. Don't ever give up and say, well, all the elite guys are gone. All the good guys are gone. You can hit a Devy player that is elite from pretty much any position. In the 2014 draft in that deep league that I joined a dispersal, I was looking through their startup draft, and Ezekiel Elliott went 60th overall. He went 60th overall. Guys like Mike Davis,
that's crazy,
and Clive Walford were going in front of him. Leonte Carew was drafted in front of him. Yes, guys like Todd Gurley and Amari Cooper and those guys were drafted in front of him. But the point is he was younger. Somebody took a chance on him, and it paid off.
Wow. I can't imagine being that owner that took him there and now just gets to see this guy. I mean, that feeling has to be just amazing. Now, granted, it is rare, you know, like you said, the majority of them don't turn out that way. But to get that feeling from that one player has to just be amazing. Have you ever hit on a player like that from a super deep pick?
I just barely did the startup on one of the deep ones this year. Okay. And the dispersal draft with the Devy draft was this year. So okay. I haven't even gone one full season with the deep. I have done Todd Gurley and Devin Funchess were my mm-hmm. first two Devy picks in my first ever league. I did trade to get the extra rights, and they both hit. As far as I'm concerned, Gurley is a very big success, and I think Funchess will be. I don't think he necessarily will break out this year. He will have a better year. I'm predicting a year three breakout for him.
Okay. Trying to think, is there any other aspects to Devy leagues that we may have missed?
Just make sure that you read the format before you sign up for it. If you're looking to join a brand new startup, how do they determine the draft order? Is the draft separate from the rookie draft? Sometimes they'll say, in order to keep them straight, the Devy draft will be rounds 1 through 3. And the rookie drafts will be rounds 4 through 6. And when you're trading picks and you're trading a third round pick, you're really trading a first round rookie pick. So you have to be careful each time you get a trade offer and look at it and say, okay, that's a first round rookie pick. It will be, there's probably going to be 20 Devy players off the board. And of those 20 players, probably 8 of them are first round picks. So unless this is an early pick, it could be a second or third round value. And you've got to just kind of gauge that.
And if you get confused and you accidentally trade a rookie pick thinking it was just a Devy pick, you can just ask your commissioner to reverse it, right?
Yeah. You must've heard the podcast the other night.
Yeah. I just listened to that one and, was totally on board. That's a tough way to learn. And even, I mean, I don't know. I kind of agree with the people that misclick things because sometimes those boxes are so tiny, but even on the computer, I think it needs to be like a big red font for the box you're checking. I don't know. It's something needs to make it stand out more.
Yeah. I made a mistake recently on, I looked at my phone and I didn't see the player. I saw the picks. Mm-hmm. I wanted to move up two spots in a Devy draft to grab a player that I was interested in. And I felt like if I did the two spots, I might've still been able to get the player. That's the thing. Moving up in Devy is risky too, because there's no real ADP.
Yeah.
And you don't know what your league mates are thinking. There's some okay rankings out there, but there's nothing that's set in stone and clear. Like with rookie drafts, even though there's still people all over the place, there's a pretty, if you've been involved in a couple of rookie drafts, you know the order and where they generally fall. But yeah, in a Devy draft, you could see a guy like Nick Chubb go first overall, or he might go 5th overall. It depends on what other people are looking at, what they're looking for, what they value. And so it's all over the place. So I might have been able to just be patient and wait, but I wanted to move up and secure it. And I thought I was trading picks for picks, and I wasn't going to pay a lot to move up. But I missed the fact that Ladarius Green was in the offer as well. It was a counter offer from my league mate. And so when I went to the computer to accept it, just as I clicked accept and okay, I saw Ladarius Green and it's tight end premium. And I was like, are you kidding me? Oh, I was so sick, but I didn't ask the commissioner to reverse. Yeah, that is a huge loss. He went and flipped him for a 2017 first round Debbie pick too. It's like, I posted on the message board that I made the mistake. And I said, but I am going to just suck it up and take the loss because it's my own fault. But I just wanted you guys to know that, no, I didn't want to move up that badly that I was going to pay picks plus Ladarius Green to move up.
But, oh my gosh. Now, which way do you prefer? Do you prefer the Devy to be separate from the rookie, or would you like them to be all mixed in?
I've done both, and I like it when they're separate, to be honest.
Just different multiple activity times.
Yeah, partly that, and partly just because then you know everybody else is going to be taking a Devy player. If you've got a finite number, like that's one other wrinkle that some commissioners put in. There's 20 total Devy, and when they're gone, they're gone. Everybody can pick. You can pick as many Devy players as you want. You can roster as many as you want. But once the league is a total, it's 20, that's it. So that's really, and then they're mixed in with the rookies. So do you take a rookie that you know is in the NFL, that has a team that was drafted in the first round, or do you take your shot on a really high Debbie prospect? And then, or do you just sit back and wait and maybe grab one of your sleepers later on in the third or fourth round of the rookie draft when most of the rookie talent is waning, and then take a chance on somebody that has potential in your eyes to excel and exceed everybody's expectations?
So that's got to be really a different challenge when there's a league limit on the number of Devys, because there's probably at least one or two people that really go hard to the Devy and others that just ignore it. Then
that's true.
That's got to be interesting.
And then the other wrinkle is, so out of the 20 players, say that 12 of them are 2017 eligible and all 12 of them come out. That's 8 players that are still in the 2018 and 2019, that those 8 are part of the 20 league total limit. So there's only 12 more next season. And then there's, so with 12 Devy, now how do you figure out the value of those picks? A first could be either a high Devy pick or it could be a high rookie pick.
And I think I kind of like that way. That way intrigues me, because then there's really variables that just get thrown in there. And the rookie draft, then still there's probably plenty of value in the rookie draft still.
Yes. But because it could be either.
You can take some shots on them.
Yes. So I'm in a couple of leagues that are like that, and I do like that as well. I do prefer to have them separate, but I don't mind, because it's just a whole nother layer of strategy.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I kind of like that way.
You like that one the best?
I think I do like that one the best. Strategy is, I'm a big fan of strategy. Anything that's strategy. I've said it on here before. If I can use strategy and go fish against my kids, I would love to be able to figure out that strategy to play go fish even. But
Well, then Devy League sounds like it would be good for you, because the more work that you put into it and the more studying, it really can separate your hit rate versus other guys that just, you know, they hear a name and that name has buzz and they don't necessarily watch film. They don't watch anything about them. They just know that the name is out there. You would have an advantage then. And
that's where I limit myself, because I haven't yet gone to the, I'm going to watch my own film.
Oh, okay.
Part yet. I haven't gone there yet.
But then
I just jumped into Dynasty. So I already feel that urge to go and watch clips of people already. I've just kind of tried to fight it off. So eventually, I'm not going to be able to.
I really like your podcasts because it gets to show your listeners the different variety. Like, I play in some IDP leagues. I know you've done some stuff on that, just to find out what they are. In some flex and start two quarterbacks, and I've even got a triple flex where you can start up to three quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about competitive, just trying to get quarterbacks that are starters. Yep. Is tough, and they are gold in that format. So Devy is a very fun format. I would recommend it to anybody, especially if you have some dynasty experience and you want to reach out for that next fix, that next hit of dynasty junkiehood, because it is so addicting. I've started with the one Devy league with one Devy player per season, and now I've got half a dozen Devy leagues, and some of them as deep as 30 Devy rosters. And I'm looking forward to seeing them over the years and what my hit rate is and how successful that I am. And if putting in all this extra hard work and I'm still on the same playing field as everybody else, then maybe, you know, whatever. But it's still going to be fun to see the prospects hit.
Yeah, it definitely does sound like a lot of fun. I am in one league that has a tiny, small amount of Devy, so I got a little taste of it this year, but and it was fun. It's probably going to be something that I'm going to want to grow. So I think we'll move on now to the out of the league questions.
Okay.
So since I now know that you're a Survivor fan, what is your favorite type of a Survivor competition? You know, they always kind of repeat the same ones every season. Is there a particular type of competition that you would prefer to compete in?
If you're talking about the individual or the team challenges?
No, I'm talking about, you know, there's some of those ones that are an endurance one where it's, hey, stand on this tiny little piece of wood for 10 hours and you'll win immunity versus other, you know, the puzzling.
Personal standpoint, I like the puzzles and anything where you've got to think, or the ones where you're on the team and everybody is blindfolded and you've got to shout out the commands and help them find stuff.
I hate that one. I feel so bad for the people. Everything. I mean, you know, they're probably like there's a producer off in the background. Hey, tell them to go right. We need somebody to really rack themselves and really get hurt.
I do know that Mark Burnett loves to see people get scratched up. He, you know, when you're sliding down the wooden platforms and they get splinters and they get all bumped up. He loves that. They spend a lot of time working on those challenges, but I like the ones that are combination mm-hmm. between the physical and then you've got to use your brain at the end
when you're exhausted.
The endurance. Yeah, when you're exhausted, exactly. A couple times, one was in Burlington, Vermont. Kathy O'Brien lives there, and she was having viewing parties during the All-Star season, season 8. And so with the viewing parties, they were raising money for a local charity. And each week they would have Survivor Challenges. They'd ask like 8 people from the audience to come up. And I got selected, and that particular night was Survivor Trivia. And I was killing it. I was putting down the people's first and last name before people were putting down the first letter of the first name of the guy, like, who's Captain America? And I had Colby Donaldson out and written down before they even got the C out. And
on a piece of parchment paper?
Yeah, well, you have to write it and then at the same time reveal it. And it was, I won that trivia night and I ended up winning a gift certificate. But all of the winners from each of the weeks of the viewing parties got to go to the major finals, which was at the night of the finale. And it was at Petroglyphs, which is indoor rock climbing place. So they had some physical challenges. I had to cross a tightrope. And I've always been able to throw a football or any kind of ball. I was good at off ball and really good at any kind of hand-eye coordination. Balance has never been my big thing. And after working on a puzzle, then we had to run and cross a tightrope that's 3 feet off the ground. There was a mat below and you had ropes that you could hold on to, but they weren't very sturdy. And I made it across and my legs were shaking. I got to the end. I had to jump across. And then there was this thing where I had to hold on to two bricks and have your feet sliding on the other two bricks. And you had to always touch one hand or one foot to two bricks at the same time and go around the corner. And at the beginning, you had the items on this table and they covered it up. So you're doing all these things, and you just have that never give up attitude.
Yeah, you broke up there just a little bit at the end. Answer me this. How did you finish in that challenge that was combined of all kinds of craziness from Survivor?
I think I finished technically third out of all the people that were there. I had written down 9 out of 10, and one guy collaborated with another guy to get the 10th item. Nobody could remember all 10, and I housed. And this other guy, they started collaborating and was collaborating with somebody else that didn't know any more than the ones. I had 9, and they didn't know the final one. And the tough thing to do is once you memorize them, your next thing was a challenge. Mm-hmm. And if it was a physical challenge, you continue to just say in your head what items were. But you had to immediately go from memorizing 10 items to working some numbers on a math puzzle and then into the physical challenge. And so it just made it tougher to remember them because I was constantly just running them through my mind as I'm participating, but you can't let it mess up your math either.
Now when those guys were collaborating, as you said, did you scream out collusion? Did you scream that out?
No. No, because at that point they were letting anybody, I mean, you could share with anybody. Nobody had the 10. And I was just trying to find anybody that I even asked Kathy O'Brien herself. She didn't have any more than I think 7 on her list. And they were the same as what I had. So,
well, I think that is a fantastic way to end the out of the league part. That's great. Katie, I appreciate you joining me. This was a lot of fun. I definitely know I will eventually dive more into the Devi. I think I'm going to try and take a season of just Dynasty before I haven't even, and I'm really holding off IDP too. I've got to hold all this off because right now I've got to just ease myself into this addiction as it goes hobby as it goes further and further. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Thanks
it's,
for
it's
joining.
It's a lot of fun. And
it is.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully if I inspired anybody in your listening audience to join a Devi League, then that's a good thing. And
that is a good thing.
Hit me up on Twitter if you ever have any Devi questions. I'm at FF_Skylar399, and I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody has.
And where else can your work be found?
Oh, under the helmet. UGHDynasty.com right there, and I'm also on their weekly podcast. It's out every Wednesday.
All righty. I appreciate you joining me. As for me, you can interact with me. I am at Empire FFL. Show email is fantasyinsanitypod@gmail.com. I will say I don't check that all that often, so Twitter is definitely the way to go if you have a question for me. As for that, as for everything else, thanks for listening. And enjoy the insanity. Thanks.
Woke up, staring at this empty room. Looked at 1,000 different pictures that your mother took of you. You see, I had this crazy dream last night. This man, he talked to me. He told me everything that's good and bad about my history. But he said that you are the future. He said that you are the future. And the future looks good. The future looks good. Oh, call me anytime. Yeah, every time you're losing it. And tell me anyone and everyone that makes you feel like shit. Because you know anybody, everybody else can lie.
Pictures that your mother took good.